Chapter 5. Terra, the Imperial Palace. The days passed. The orcs did not come. The Star Fortress hung in the sky above the Imperial Palace with dreadful imminence. It refused to change its threat into action. The orcs hardly needed to bother invading, Vangarich thought as he walked towards the Great Chamber. The panic the moon's appearance had created had killed hundreds of thousands, and brush fires of frenzy continued to ignite despite Werner Zech's massive mobilization of enforcers. Give us enough time, Vangarich wanted to tell the Greenskins, and we'll do the job for you. He had never felt more helpless. In the depths of sleepless nights, he faced the idea that once the threat had arrived on Terra's doorstep, the Officio Assassinorum had become irrelevant. Why should he worry about influencing the political life of the Imperium or checking its successes when there would soon no longer be any politics left? He didn't like questions he could not answer. He would not stop fighting for the Imperium until he no longer drew breath. But all his struggles over the last months had been worse than useless. He had failed to forestall the crisis, and the crisis was on a scale he would have dismissed as laughable. He had been guilty of the same complacency as the rest of the vain puppets who called themselves the High Lords. His sins were, by some measure, even greater. He had been pleased to believe he knew better. He'd been an arrogant fool, and now, here he was, off to take his place like a good puppet on the stage for what might be the last performance before the curtain was brought down. The uproar that greeted Vangarich as he entered the Great Chamber was tremendous. If this was indeed the final performance, it was going to be a spectacular one. The great scream had finally reached the ears of the High Lords. The chamber was full for the first time in decades. In their tens of thousands, the lesser lords, petty governors and bureaucrats with leverage filled the tiers. They had come, ostensibly, for answers. But they weren't listening. Every voice was raised in argument, hurling questions, demands, and meaningless threats. Some were weeping. Others had abandoned all pretense at dialogue, and their shouts had become inarticulate howls. Vangarich walked the gold-inlaid marble avenue towards the dais. It was like making his way through the maw of a wounded, raging beast. The chamber, to his grief, no longer held a government. He hoped that what replaced it was not the death cry of a civilization. A phalanx of Lucifer Blacks guarded the approach to the dais. On either side, the floor was a roiling anthill of serfs and messengers. They rushed on errands whose meaninglessness was disguised by urgency. Vangarich was surprised when Veritas's power-armored form emerged from that press, brushing past the startled Blacks to walk by his side the rest of the way.
"There are less inconvenient ways of meeting," Vangarich said. "I had other business."
He gave Vangarich a hard look. The eyes in that aged, lined skull burned.
"You have been interfering in matters that don't concern you."
"Have I?"
"I am doing you the rare courtesy of giving you a warning."
Vangarich stopped walking. He was delighted to find that he could still laugh.
"Really? You're warning me? And here I was looking forward to a long and prosperous retirement, reading by the light of an orc star fortress. Anyway, I'm sure I don't know what you mean."
"The Inquisition won't tolerate intrusions into its affairs."
"You speak for the totality of the Inquisition, do you? And by the way, have you officially taken over as Inquisitorial representative?"
Veritas glared. Vangarich shook his head.
"Inquisitor, if you can't stay on top of your internal politics, I don't see how you can expect the rest of us to do so."
He started walking again. Veritas strode beside him.
"I am trying to speak to you, Grandmaster, because I know that you, at least, are not a fool."
"I'm tempted to interpret that as meaning you do not have a high opinion of the High Lords."
"I do not."
"All such opinions may well be moot."
Vangarich wondered if he sounded as tired as he felt.
"I don't believe that. This obsession with the orcs is a mistake."
Vangarich kept his face straight.
"I can't imagine why the orcs should be commanding so much of our attention," he muttered.
They reached the dais. As they took their seats, Eckarth went through the motions of calling the session to order. There was too much uproar for anyone beyond the circle of chairs to hear him, but the sight of the debate beginning brought a measure of calm to the great chamber. 500,000 people strained to listen. Voxcasters carried the debate to all corners of the vast space. Vangorich gestured at the mass assembly. To Udo, he said,
I rejoice to see the great chamber so lively.
As do I, Grandmaster. The Lord Commander sounded quite genuine.
Vangorich swept his gaze over the 12. He judged that some of them, like Lansung, would have preferred the council to be private still. The High Admiral in particular was facing massive public humiliation. Others, Udo among them, apparently saw the involvement of the full chamber as a way of spreading the blame for whatever happened next as widely as possible. The High Lords were behaving as if they were facing nothing worse than an especially acute political crisis, not extermination. Then again, the Orcs had not attacked. Every other system where a star fortress had intruded would have long since been burning or enslaved. The anomaly wasn't lost on the other lords.
Why haven't the Greenskins invaded? Eckarth asked Lansung.
The High Admiral shrugged. Defeat was corroding him further each day.
I have no idea, he said. Perhaps the Fabricator General can enlighten us, Vangorich said.
We have no satisfactory answer to give, said Kubik. The behavior is anomalous. One can construct scenarios wherein the means necessary to transport a body of that mass to the heart of the Imperium are such that the Veridi Giganticus must rebuild energy stores prior to further action. But this is mere speculation, an inevitable result of our lack of data. Since this behavior does not conform to any previously seen in the Orcs, the inevitable conclusion is that it is not simply their technology that is undergoing dramatic evolution. Perhaps even cladogenesis is possible. We can rule nothing out. The situation is an interesting one.
Does that mean there will be time for the fleet to return?
Eckarth's wistfulness was childlike. It was picked up by the assembly. The murmur of hope was loud as thunder, fragile as gossamer.
Unknown!
Kubik's brief response was as close to a shrug as the Fabricator General came.
The Orcs will let us know, Lansung said.
The crowd rumble grew discontented.
Is that what you propose?
Jaskina Tull asked.
That we wait to find out? That is not acceptable.
Do you see an alternative, Speaker?
Some of Lansung's old sneer came back.
We take the fight to the Orcs.
Now Lansung laughed. The sound was ugly with contempt and despair.
But of course, how idiotic that no one else thought of that. I suppose you have a brilliant way of doing this in the absence of the Imperial Navy?
Yes.
The one word shut down Lansung's response and brought everyone up short. The silence of a collective breath being held fell over the great chamber. Tull rose from her seat. As she began to speak, she walked along the perimeter of the dais. Her robes were a magisterial red and black. She orated with one bare arm outstretched and punctuating each point with sweeping gestures. She held her left arm across her waist, a fold of her robes draped over it, and she strode the stage of the assembly as if born for this moment.
The defense of the Imperium, she proclaimed, is not just the responsibility of the Navy, the Astra Militarum, or the Adeptus Astartes.
She paused.
It is the responsibility of every citizen, of every human.
She tilted her head back, as if gazing onto distant battlefields.
In this hour of greatest need, the Imperium calls upon all of us. I will not refuse to answer. Will any of you?
She waited, and the cries of no came on cue, building on each other and on the anticipated salvation her confidence promised. Though we had no idea where Tull was going with this performance, Vangorich was impressed. Tull had always been a figure of great presence among the High Lords. The peace that had lured the Imperium into its deadly complacency had also denied Tull the opportunity to influence the currents of policy as much as she would have liked. Now she was in her glory.
The Greenskins have their moon. What are the numbers that threaten us?
Kubik said,
We have as yet no way of properly measuring the scale of...
What does it matter when we are billions?
Tull shouted to the tears. Her voice rang with strength. It was the sound of defiance. Vangarich had a sudden image of countless iterations of Joskina Tull, stretching back through human history, standing on clifftops and hurling her indomitability at invaders, inspiring the armies behind her to the impossible. The power she had was magnificent. His concern was how she would choose to wield it.
The orcs have weapons, Tull said. Don't we? They have ships. Don't we? They have the presumption to believe they can invade us. Then we shall invade them. We will flood them with such numbers that the fear they have visited upon our world will pale before their own terror.
She took a step back, her face shining as the crowd's roar swept over the dais in waves. So much hope, Vangarich thought, and Tull hadn't offered a single concrete detail of her proposed miracle. Lansung said,
And how is this invasion going to take place without the presence of the navy?
Tull turned her smile on him, and it was eviscerating in its forbearance.
We don't need the navy.
She looked back to the assembly.
We have the merchant fleets. We have ships beyond counting. Right here at anchor over Terra, and in the Sol system, we have more vessels than the orcs could ever hope to defend against. I am issuing an immediate recall of all merchant ships. We shall have a fleet that will fill the void. This fleet will carry our millions to the obscenity in our skies and destroy the orcs utterly. This is the hour of the proletarian crusade.
The clamor that greeted her pronouncement shook the walls of the great chamber. If sound could be harnessed as power, the orc moon would have been blasted in that moment. Vangarich saw one of Kubik's limbs twitch as the sudden peak in sound overwhelmed his sensory inputs. When the crest of the celebration faded, Veriot spoke up, indignant.
You speak as if Terra has no defenders!
The smile Tull favored him with was different from the one she had given Lansung. It was an invitation to join her in the light of victory.
I am not forgetting the Imperial Guard, Lord Commander Militant, she said. The merchant's armada would, of course, transport the full force of the Emperor's fist. But we must strike with all the might and anger that Terra can muster. You would not deny the people this great chance to stand for the Imperium?
You know I wouldn't,
Beriolt answered. Vangarich was still trying to process the implications of Tull's plan. The scale of the madness was so vast, it outstripped horror. Lansung was having some of the same difficulty.
How are you going to destroy the fortress with other armed vessels?
He asked.
We aren't, said Tull. As I said, this is an invasion.
Ground troops?
Vangarich said, aghast.
Yes.
Orating again, she continued,
I will not pretend that great sacrifices do not lie ahead, on Terra and above. Production will suffer. Those who remain will have to do the work of the millions at war. Many ships will be lost in the assault. Many warriors will be lost in the landing and in the storming of the fortress. But the orcs cannot stop them all. We are too many.
Warming to the idea and the role he would play in the triumph to come, Beriolt said,
Under the command of the Astra Militarum, the people of Terra will sweep the orcs to oblivion.
Lansung's jaw hung open for a moment. Then he sat back, defeated. Unless and until the Imperial Navy was able to aid Terra, he was an irrelevance, and he knew it.
You surprise me,
Vangarich said to Veriolt. The Lord Commander Militant was more of a political animal than his predecessor. Heth had always struck Vangarich as being more at home in combat than in governance. Veriolt, though a veteran, had spent much of his career leading from the strategium table. It was easier for him to see troops as pieces in a game of regicide and losses as statistics. Vangarich wondered if he realized that he was a junior partner in the alliance with Tull, as the guard had been when Lansung's star had been in the ascendant. The plan was Tull's, as was the armada. Beriolt's share of the glory would be what she permitted. Vangarich caught himself. There would be no glory to partition. The proposal was mad. Even a group as prone to self-delusion as the High Lords couldn't be blind to that fact. Yet Verriolt was unfazed by his comment.
Spickertal's argument has merit, the Lord Commander Militant said. The regiments of the Astra Militarum stationed on Terra don't have the numbers we need against an entire world of orcs, even with the reinforcement of the Penal Legions. The call has been sent to the entire Imperial Guard, but the Cadians, the Valhallans, the Mordians, they still need to get here, said Lansung. And they are already engaging the orcs.
Eckhart spoke up.
The mechanics of recruitment will be complex. There is little time. I have no doubt that the Administratum is up to the challenge, said Tull. It is. This will be a mobilization to give birth to legends.
The cheer that answered him wasn't as excited as the ones that Tull summoned, but it was the greatest Eckhart, a poor speaker, had ever received.
When great sacrifice is called for, faith and inspiration are more vital than ever,
Mesring said.
They are indeed, said Tull.
Vangarich vowed to track down those responsible for giving the Ecclesiarch the antidote to the poison the Grand Master had introduced into his system. Now Mesring would be spreading the toxins of his influence even more effectively. Tull's strategy was lunatic, but it was also brilliant. At a stroke, she had Verriolt, Eckhart, and Mesring invested in the plan. Lansung was opposed, but he was a pariah. Udo was eager to distance himself from the High Admiral, so Vangarich expected him to side with Tull also. If Gibran, Sark, and Anwar had reservations, they were not voicing them.
The information such an invasion could gather would be invaluable, Kubik said.
Even Zek was nodding with approval.
The people need something concrete, he said. The recruitment should redirect energy, diminish the fear, take the wind out of the riots.
Then Tull spoke to Lansung and cemented her preeminence.
The crusade will not be possible without the assistance of the Imperial Navy.
What?
The armaments of the merchant fleet are light at best. By numbers alone, I know we can overwhelm the Orc defences, but with the Autocephalax Eternal leading the way, we will punch through with ease.
Lansung stared at her with undisguised hatred. Vangarich would have applauded Tull's move if he hadn't been sure that she was leading them all to the slaughter. She had Lansung cornered. If he agreed with her plan, the Navy would be in a position that was even more subordinate to the merchant fleet than the Imperial Guards. If he refused, he would be offering up the spectacle of the flagship remaining behind, the Navy sitting out a fight while the common citizens came forward at the hour of Terra's greatest need. He could not refuse.
The Autocephalax Eternal will be at the forefront of this great endeavor, Lansung said.
Though he sounded sick, the great chamber resounded with more celebration. We're doing it, Vangarich thought. We're doing the work of the orcs for them, and we're cheering our own destruction.
What if the invasion fails?
He heard himself making an effort he already knew was futile.
What then? If the bulk of the Terran regiments of the Astra Militarum are lost in this venture, what defences will remain?
Your lack of faith troubles me, Grand Master, Tull said. The guard will return triumphant, and the orcs will have been routed. There will be no need for defence.
Do you really believe that? Vangarich wondered. Do you really think this fever dream will come to pass? Are you capable of seeing beyond the shift in the balance of power that you're orchestrating? There were no answers. Whether Tull believed what she was saying or not no longer mattered. Vangarich could feel the machinery of the invasion already in motion. Tull had spoken and conjured events into reality.
This course of action is a folly, Veritas said. This obsession with the orcs will only open the way for the true enemy.
His words were swallowed in the applause for Tull. The rest of the 12 didn't acknowledge that he had spoken. Vangarich felt something that was not too distant from sympathy for the Inquisitor. He might have Venand on the defensive, but the man's hand was weak. Insisting that the orcs were not the primary threat would make him appear delusional. Veritas was clearly intelligent and driven by belief rather than political gain, yet his dogmatism was causing its own damage. When the assembly dissolved, it was in a spirit of jubilation, as ferocious as the initial excitement that had greeted Lansung's victory. But there was an edge of hysteria, too. The hope was brittle. The investment in Tull's plan was total, but the need to believe in it was even stronger than the belief itself. When Vangarich left the dais, Veritas walked with him. The Inquisitor's style of interaction was as blunt as Venan's was subtle.
"They are even greater fools than I supposed," Veritas said. "And the path we are on will lead us to disaster. The disaster is already here. A worse one, then. What would you recommend, Inquisitor Veritas? Do you see actions that either the Inquisition or the Officio could take that would alter the course that has been set? Would Speaker Tull's death matter now?"
He didn't wait for an answer.
"No, it wouldn't.
Too many of the other High Lords were invested in the Crusade. If Tull fell, one of her colleagues would turn her into a martyr and become the new face of the Endeavour.
Or are you calling for the assassination of the entire 12?
No,
I don't think you are."
In this moment, though, Vangarich felt the temptation of that idea. He walked faster, leaving the other old predator behind. As he left the Great Chamber, Vangarich forced himself not to clench his fists in frustration. Once again, he had been helpless to prevent madness piled atop catastrophe. The closest thing he had to hope was the latest report from Krul. If the arrival of the moon had Venand even more determined to reach the Inquisitorial Fortress, then perhaps there was something there that might be worthy of actual hope. He detested being in the dark, but Venand, at least, was sane. Where did that leave the Officio? At best, assisting an effort about which Vangarich knew nothing. The so-called proletarian crusade would march ahead, and the avalanche of events would continue. He stalked towards his quarters, filled with dread, and wishing for the punishment of fools.